Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up.
That's right. The show brought to you, as always, by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine. In fact, you saw him just this morning.
I did.
Yep. Or yesterday morning. Yesterday morning.
Yesterday afternoon.
And happytrees.co. Okay. So much to talk about today.
Wow.
It was like every time we kept getting the show plan, we're like, oh, no, switch. So we're going to start off with Mark Tapps, and we're going to have him on here in a second. He's got a great column up. But I don't know if you saw, a bunch of rhinos are trying to file a lawsuit just a few, maybe like an hour ago, trying to keep Trump off the ballot.
Including Norm Anderson from Jefferson County.
Michelle Priola, Kevin Priola's wife.
Kevin Priola's wife.
That's right.
And some chief of staff were
Bill Owens. Right. Krista Kafer.
Krista Kafer, solid Republican.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be talking about that.
And we're going to talk about the huge brouhaha in which Todd Watkins and a few other top Republicans sent one to the representative, asked him stand up for the January 6th defendants. And then Ken Buck did a several-page letter, which man, talk about sinking his career.
Right, and we're going to debunk Buck. But first we have with us Mark Tapps. He is a Shulman Fellow on Popular Culture at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Had a great column in Front Page Magazine talking about masculinity and the future of the West. Mark, so first, thank you. Appreciate your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And as you said, we've got a ton to talk about, but I want to start off with this because I think your column, you say an emasculated civilization is a doomed civilization. And we've talked a lot about that. We have a 12-year-old son. Raising a boy these days is raising any child is never easy, but it's tricky with boys too. So why don't you talk to us? You know, an emasculated civilization is a doomed civilization. Why do you say that?
Well, that's kind of a big question. I think you can see, if you look around at our culture today, that men are in crisis. And it's, you know, this is no secret now. A lot of people are talking about it. You know, Tucker Carlson has done whole segments on it, and a lot of masculinity gurus, as I call them, like Jordan Peterson, they've become very popular because we have, a half century or more of feminist bashing of men. And changing of the culture has led us to a point where we discuss masculinity in terms of its toxicity now. You know, toxic masculinity, that phrase has become kind of a household name or a household term. And so you've got a lot of young men, a couple of generations worth now, who have been raised to believe that their very nature, that their very masculinity is poisonous, and that they are contributing to rape culture, and that they are oppressive and misogynistic, and that we need to drive that out of them somehow, or train that out of them, or raise them in certain ways that diminish their masculinity. And so we've got a point now where young men feel adrift. They feel like something is wrong with them. They don't know really what their purpose is in life or what it means to be a man. I mean, this is probably the first time in human history where there's been no agreed upon understanding of what it means to be a man and what a man does. Our whole civilization in America and elsewhere in the Western world is at a crisis point in terms of masculinity, because when men don't have a purpose, when they're adrift and they begin to feel that they don't matter, then the culture suffers and civilization begins to disintegrate. And I think you can see a lot of examples in various areas in which our civilization is in decline. And I think the two are inextricably linked, this crisis of masculinity and the decline of the West. So that's why I say an emasculated culture is a doomed culture.
Well, you know, you look at the Oliver North, you know, Richmond, North of Richmond, and his song to a certain extent is about that, right? He talks about, I mean, he's a young man and alienation, and it's, and, you know, all he does is get kicked down, right? And,
All society does is try to drive you 6 feet under the ground. And he's talking about young men, and it's true in suicide. I mean, and that's why it was attacked so vociferously. You know, you can't have people out there telling the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, his song has certainly touched the nerve in a lot of, in a number of ways, a number of areas, but yeah, masculinity is one of them, you know, and there's, as I said, there's a real crisis of masculinity out there. Men are adrift, and they're looking now toward these masculinity gurus, some of whom offer them real direction and purpose, like Jordan Peterson. And then there are some darker influences, I would say, that are out there that can be found on the internet. And so I think we're at a point in our culture where men are going to be drawn toward one sort of a model or ideal of masculinity or another. And whichever one is going to prevail is going to determine the future of our culture. So this is a very serious choice that lays before before men and our culture today.
Well, and you know, and you're, I mean, I encourage everybody to go to Front Page Magazine and read this, because you do, you bring up a good point. So you've got these young men, they're adrift, right? They're tired of everybody telling them that they suck and that they're toxic. So they kind of anymore have two choices. They can either become a total wimp and become emasculated, or as you said, this Andrew Tate and some of these other people promote this completely hedonistic version of masculinity. And that is so easily available when you give the pornography on the internet, when you give you know, the Tinder, where you just swipe and pick somebody, right? I mean, there are so many things that are there, the prevalence of drugs and things like that to fuel that hedonistic side, which is equally an unhappy place to be, right? I mean, if you're a woman, okay, maybe you don't want to, you know, you don't want a masculine guy, but you certainly don't want you know, the other side either. And you're right, there's this, as you point out in your column, there is zero anymore, or at least in the popular culture, connection between being a man, having morals, having principles, having values, and helping guide your family through that, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there are two different kind of perspectives now, as I mentioned or alluded to a moment ago. And you have some of these gurus, these guides, like Jordan Peterson, or even Republican Senator Josh Hawley is another one. He's written a book, a really good book called Manhood. And they're on the side of what I would call moral masculinity, which is teaching men not only how to be men, how to recover what it means to do things that are manly, but how to be good men. Because there is a difference between being just, you know, good at being a man and being a good man. And then on the other hand, you've got someone like Andrew Tate, whom a lot of conservatives were introduced to recently when Tucker Carlson had Tate on for a 3-hour interview, nearly 3 hours. Tate represents the dark side of this direction that masculinity can go in. But it's very attractive. What he represents is a kind of an alpha male strut and swagger that a lot of young, that, you know, very attractive to a lot of young men. I mean, Tate looks like he is living large. You know, he's a multimillionaire. He flaunts his money and his supercars, and he's a former athlete, you know, and so a lot of young men look at him and think, wow, you know, yes, I'd like to be like that. I'd like to have, to have those cars and smoke expensive cigars and look like an alpha male. But behind this living large facade of Andrew Tate is a real moral and spiritual emptiness,
right?
A gaping hole. And that's, and you know, it's very appealing on a surface level, but it's empty, ultimately leads to disaster, on a moral level and a spiritual level. So it's a real temptation for young men, but, you know, it's going to lead them to a dark place ultimately.
Well, you know, the one thing I disagree with you about is this is somehow unique. You know, the most civilizations in the rotten years as it go away have this exact same pattern. If you look at French Empire and Louis Napoleon and all the transvestite balls and everything on through. I mean, and the hedonism was there as the culture began to collapse. And I guess it only came back after a war, Germany totally conquering it. But, you know, the rise and fall of Rome was writ large with hedonism and the lack of family, you know, no longer. And they blamed Christianity. They blamed saying this before they had a religion that venerated military service and family and fighting for the Roman Republic, and Christianity did not. And that's what they blame the fall. I mean, you can dispute that, but it certainly is look, Ming China became highly effeminate in its final years, which the Manchus came down and they no longer wanted to fight. And you know, look at today, Europe fights by what? Having Ukrainians. I mean, they're no different than German barbarians. We don't want to fight. We'll give you all the equipment, but you know, we're not going to do the dying.
This is definitely a sign of a civilization in decline. I think there was a poll not too long ago that was taken across Europe, and it asked people, how many of you would fight to defend your country? And the percentages were shockingly low. I mean, but I think the highest percentage of all was I've forgotten the country actually, but it was only in about 31%, but most of the countries across Europe had a percentage that ranged in the teens of people who were willing to fight for their and defend their way of life in their country. So that's
should
a
have asked
sign.
Them how many are you willing to have Ukrainians die to the last Ukrainian for your rights and liberty.
80%. Yes, we're talking with Mark Tapson here from the David Horowitz Freedom Center about his Front Page magazine article. I think some of this is by design as well, right? You want to, you destroy the family unit, you destroy the concept of motherhood, you destroy the concept of fatherhood, and you replace it with we, the government, we, the elites, we, the
you're
the
a powerful. Citizen of the world. Right. How do you defend the citizens of the world?
Well, I mean, and I think that that's kind of what they're going after, in the process, I think we're just hurting, as you said, a couple of generations of young men now.
You're absolutely right. It is totally by design, and it's been in progress for decades, well over half a century. And it's the result of the influence of what we often call cultural Marxism, because it all goes back to this Marxist worldview that the family must be abolished in order to free women and children from their slavery so that they can devote their energies to the state. it's the collective is what's important, not the individual. And you know, part of the abolition of the family, which Karl Marx explicitly called for, is destroying masculinity, because ultimately masculinity is a threat to state totalitarian control. If you have men who are strong enough and willing to fight for their families and to fight for their freedoms and their liberty, then that's a problem. That's an obstacle for the state. So
it's interesting. I was a child.
They've said about for decades to just undermine masculinity.
Right.
Well, I grew up in this, you know, hit puberty in the 60s. And I remember thinking as a kid, saying, this is strange. All the heroes that I'm given to, you know, Clint Eastwood, the James Bond, all of these people were okay. The key for you is never make any lasting bonds. Do not get married, have children. Be a loner.
Kind of like Andrew Tate.
Yeah, like Andrew Tate. But you know, certainly, dads were not shown as, you know, suburban dads are not shown as heroes. They're shown as schmucks, you know, who don't do anything. And so I didn't get married to age 59, which is a little early, but and I blame a lot. I blame a lot of that on that thing. No, you can't be a dad. That's the biggest schmuck deal in the world.
Well, the entertainment field has been, a very powerful tool in terms of spreading those messages that you were talking about. I mean, you know, Hollywood and the rest of the entertainment industry, that's part of the cultural Marxism. That's part of the cultural messaging that over time pushes these messages and these agendas. You know, you can look back to the late 50s or even early 60s when you still had TV shows where dads were respected. You know, think about the show Father Knows Best. I mean,
he was still kind of a wimp. I mean, I looked at him and I kind of went, oh, God, I don't want to be that.
Respected.
But he was respected. Yeah. Unlike Peppa Pig, where dad is just a pig.
Well, imagine today having a show called Father Knows Best. I mean, they could only mean.
Oh,
they
man,
can only mean that ironically or sarcastically, you know.
Well, all this reminded me. This reminded me when I saw, and you know, Julie says I get hung up on various things, but the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, where Rachel Zegler goes around saying, "Look, we're not doing a 1937 deal. This is not some woman looking for true love. She's looking to be the leader, right. Her dad." The Fuhrer, her dad told her she could be. I mean, don't get mad.
Exactly.
They're falling in love? How pathetic. Little girls, no. You're looking to be the leader. El Duce.
Yeah. And, you know, for 50 or 60 more years or more, we've been empowering women, right? And so that's led to this notion that women don't need men. They don't need relationships or love. They just need positions of power.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, we've been disempowering men. You know, think of Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan from not that long ago, the future is female.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know, that's going to be a pretty short-lived future if only the female, if it's only the female half. Shouldn't it be men and women working together in a complementary fashion, for the future? Exactly.
Well, and, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. All I was just going to finish by rounding it off and saying, you know, we've been empowering women, but disempowering men in the process.
Right.
Well, and Jim Jackson, one of our listeners, says we have to have more than one type of masculinity. Some have to excel at physical pursuit, some at seeking justice. Both are needed for protection and for peace. And to even broaden that out, whatever happened to the concept of, you know, just respect everybody for where they are, right? If I'm my sister, for instance, when I grew up, I was the oldest of five, right? My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I was like, I will never be a stay-at-home mom. I was going to go out and have a career, blah, blah, blah. And I did, right? My youngest sister, all she wanted to do, and sincerely, was get married, have a family, stay at home, take care of her kids. And she did that too, right? But I think we were maybe a little bit of the last generation where it was okay. If you wanted to stay home and have kids, you could stay home and have kids. And you could be friends with me, you know what I mean, who just wanted the career. And I mean, I wanted both, but you know what I mean? And it's the same thing for men. If you're a guy who wants to be, you know, I don't know, something, a librarian, you should be able to. If you're a guy.
Not a librarian. Not an American Library Association these days. No.
Go to Top Gun flight school, you should be able to, and everything in between. It seems to be without being canceled or shamed. I mean, that to me should be sort of the end goal.
No, I disagree with that. I think
we should be able to do what we want.
No, I think we should be held up to things. The heroes ought to be. We should be encouraged to look to those who you know, emulate those who went to Top Gun and do other things, and not necessarily those who went become a librarian.
Yeah, but if he's supporting his family and working hard, and
well, then those are the things he's doing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think you know, the same idea. You can't have sports heroes. No, they're toxic masculinity, and the whole thing in the schools. We're not going to keep score. Well, that's a feminine deal. No score. We'll just play around, huh?
Everybody wins. Yeah.
Well, I
think you are right that, you know, women have been in their traditional roles as mothers and wives. That's been really diminished and not viewed as a valid way of life for women. It's considered kind of demeaning now. You know, they be striving for power and then to be on the, you know, be CEOs of corporations, or at best, or at the very least, to do both, you know, be the CEO of a major corporation and raise children and be a wife. But the wife and motherhood thing, that sort of traditional role for women, that's been viewed for many years now as as something to look down upon.
Yes.
Well, and I think it's a flip side. Hey, and Mark, I hate to do this because we have to let you go. Now we have other stuff, other guests coming on, but.
No, this has been great. You've been great.
I mean, I appreciate that. So I'd really encourage everybody, Masculinity and the Future of the West on Front Page Magazine. And you've got all kinds of stuff up there too, right?
Front Page Mag is a great website for political commentary and cultural commentary. I mean, I highly recommend it. And in terms of following me specifically, I've got a Substack account, marktapson.substack.com, or if you go to substack.com and just search for Culture Warrior, that's me.
All right, that's great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's fun.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. So we're going to switch now. And, I don't know if Todd Watkins, I should text him, or Mark or Thomas, maybe you want to give him a holler and say, if Todd wants to come on now, we can get him on. He might not be here yet. But we're going to switch. Oh, yeah. We'll bring in early. So Todd and Anna put out a letter.
And a couple of them.
And several other people. Yes.
It was Todd's letter. Signed on to by three or four other people.
And the gist of it was asking for our congressional representatives and other people to kind of work on behalf of justice for some of these January 6th defendants.
And of course, we only have three Republicans. So it goes to Ken Buck, it goes to Lauren Boebert, and it goes to
Doug Lamborn.
It wasn't an accusatory letter. It was just describing all the horrible things that are happening and January 6th. I mean, you didn't attack any of these representatives. You just said you need to support these people.
And so Ken Buck goes full rhino. I know Mike Alrich about this, but he goes full rhino and writes a several page attack on Todd and everybody saying all of the things that you guys were saying were not true. The only problem is Ken Buck was absolutely, totally, completely wrong. We have the receipts.
Deion Sanders says.
We'll be coming through some of that. But the question is, what the frick was Ken Buck thinking, saying, I'm just going to make up a bunch of lies and attack my fellow Republicans? I mean, what did you think when you saw that bizarre and completely inaccurate letter, Todd?
Well, in all fairness to the good, honorable Ken Buck of District number 4, I would be very surprised if his elite fingers touched any keys on his keyboard.
That's true.
Writing that rebuttal, brilliant rebuttal. It was undoubtedly some 20 something skinny suit wearing college twerp that whose parents Ken owed a favor to that wrote that. I mean, the first thing is, gosh, this is gaslighting. Are you really going to expect me and everybody else to say, oh, that's right, we didn't see any of that happening?
Imagination.
Yeah, I completely
forgot. It's all internet rumor.
We polished off a bottle of Cabernet and watched, binging on Netflix. That's where I got all this from. I just misconstrued it for reality. We saw all of this happen. And so your little, your staffers gin up something. And by the way, they're citing as their credible sources the internet, which he says that I was following internet rumors. Well, I mean, everything he cited is from the internet, Politico, Associated Press.
It was all left wing. It was all left wing sites that are known for lacking. It's like having Ken saying, Trump did get Russia to fix the election in 2016 and cite the Washington Post and the New York Times. It'd be no different. I mean, his first one, this is just go to one. This is my favorite. He says, in reality, no defendants have been jailed, quote, pending charges, end quote. All were charged prior to arrest and detention. And then he cites this AP fact check story. Yes, it says that, but it's all bullshit.
Just so you know, in a 10-minute Google search, I found four January 6th defendants who have been jailed pending federal charges, right?
Why don't you explain it, really?
Within the past couple of weeks. So what happened here is normally in the federal system, what they do, because this is evil, guys, you got to understand this. It's evil on Ken Buck's part because he understands this.
No, he doesn't understand.
Well, I think he's deliberately gaslighting. But anyway,
no, he's not.
The way it works normally is in the federal government, what they do is they have a case, they present it to a grand jury, the grand jury issues an indictment, the prosecutor gets a warrant, and they arrest the person. That's usually how it works. So usually...
And the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution prevents a felony charge, because they call it high crimes and some other things, but a felony charge without a grand jury indictment. Now, that's not true in states, but it's true federally. If you're going to be charged with something that gives you over a year, you have to be indicted by a grand jury.
But what they can do and what they're doing in these January 6 cases, and I found, like I said, numerous examples of it, is they're arresting them on what they call a criminal complaint. That's just where the cop says, I have probable cause to believe this guy may have committed a crime. It's a much lower standard, right?
And it's usually used when you're just, you have to hurry. He's leaving the country, you know. It's for some reason, there's haste in doing this.
But what they do is, I found this one guy, his name is Lucas Denny, right? He was arrested on this criminal complaint. Theoretically, the U.S. Attorney's Office has 30 days to convene a grand jury, issue an indictment, and file formal charges. Well, 90 days later, this guy was still sitting in jail. No pending federal charge or pending federal charges. No federal charges have been filed. So, Ken, that's just number one. And you said in George Brockler's show there. And then there was another guy. I found two other guys, Peter Wiley, Ethan Mock, Philip Anderson. All of these people arrested on these criminal complaints being held without bond. And they haven't been charged yet. And so that part is a lie.
And then the next part of it is, because it just drives me nuts, he says, no, there are no people without bail. All these people were brought before a judge who denied him bail. That's not no bail. I mean, what do you mean? No, it's not true. They went in front of a crooked D.C. judge. And Julie Kelly says the real problem with January 6th is all the crooked judges. And they say no bail. And then Ken got it. See that you're wrong. No, Ken, just because a judge says no bail does not make it no bail. I mean, it's just he's a fool. He's a fool.
But that is no bail. I mean, if a judge denies him bail and you're kept in jail, then it's cool. It was a judge that kept me locked up. This Merrick Garland guy is righteous.
Yeah.
God, damn it, that guy.
And then I'm going to show some things here. Then the next thing he did, because I want to get your comments, and we're kind of rambling this, but Chuck and I were fired up doing our research, Todd, so bear with us here. But then he says, you guys also mentioned the horrible conditions that they're being kept in, right? And he's like, currently, none of these allegations have been substantiated by a court. It's like, what?
So that's right, because it's not allowed to go to a court, you douchebag.
But there, he pissed off Marjorie Taylor Greene. Exploded on Twitter, and we have some of the screen grabs. Thomas, we're going to run through them, okay? I'm just going to read them. If we could play, how about bring up Marjorie Taylor Greene number one, Okay, so this is from Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm appalled at this factually wrong and completely out of touch letter written by Freedom Caucus member Ken Buck about the treatment of the January 6th defendants. First off, Mr. Buck passed the buck on voting to object on January 6th, 2021 and certify Joe Biden's election. So we know, Marjorie Greene number two, please. So we know that Ken Buck has been vocally against the impeachment inquiry. He does not support Trump. Buck has also been vocally against the impeachment inquiry against Joe Biden, shockingly, completely unwilling to even ask questions in spite of the overwhelming evidence proving Biden abused his power with involvement in his son's foreign business deals. And Ken Buck wrote the book called Drain the Swamp. So he's currently on record now supporting Joe Biden's election against the impeachment inquiry and in favor and in support of Biden's DOJ persecution of January 6ers. Then she says, I'm one of only two members of Congress that went to the D.C. jail. I witnessed unusually cruel punishment of the defendants. I can personally vouch that the grave concerns expressed by Mr. Watkins and supported by the Colorado GOP are true. And then finally, Marjorie Greene, number four. Here's the full report. Yep. And then She concludes saying Marjorie Taylor Greene, Ken Buck's letter to Mr. Watkins of the El Paso County GOP appears to show full support of Biden's weaponized government and a total disconnect from the cruel reality of the January 6th defendants and the American people. I mean, so, what do you think?
And that it's that part. And I was, you know, as you can imagine, very relieved that Marjorie Greene came in on my side on this. I didn't intend for it to turn into this, you know, the stone throwing contest. And I, by the way, I haven't fired any shots back.
We're going to help you fire some shots.
I mean, obviously I would object to what he said, but I'd rather hear the point of this was to solicit support from, you know, from our electorate writ large to say, there's something wrong here. And then for Buck to come in and say, no, there's nothing wrong here. That's really what I want people to take away from this is this functioning? Does this seem normal to you? What did this ever happen before? Is this totally normal? And are you watching this Republican who has a pretty good voting record in the Congress, by the way, this Republican come out and he has turned Merrick Garland apologist.
Well, I think I checked, I said, well, you know, where did this come from? I said, is he mentally having some problems or, but no, you know, it's a whole campaign. And you can see it when they had Ray up in the Judiciary Committee, and the Republicans were just nailing him. And then Buck is the last Republican. Of course, the Democrats are going, oh, you're great. Gets up and says, you're wonderful, Mr. Ray. And I love what the FBI is doing. It is what I call the Mike Pence effort at politics. You pretend you're a conservative by saying, I'm hard, you know, I'm a prosecutor and throw everybody to jail. And I love the FBI. And whether the FBI should be loved is seen beyond him. But he's trying to be an anti-Trumper, but a old school, you know, strong conservative, and he's a fool. He is a fool. And I like Ken Buck. I've known Ken Buck for a long time, been to social gatherings with him. He's a great guy, but man, he is insane. And this letter is insane. It's factually wrong, citing left-wing sites. And he didn't, you know, he could have gone like Julie did to the department,
the Department of Justice. The stuff I got is on the Department of Justice website, so it wasn't like hard to find.
And just to be clear, you know, I'm not coming from left field on this. I'm not just.
No, he's the coming from left
of
field
of the El Paso County, you know, GOP. I was a federal agent for 24 years. I'm telling you, when I cry foul about, you know, my brethren behind the badge, man, something's wrong. I tell you what, because there's, you know, you would always have your partner's six, right? We would always, but this, no, I can't abide this, man. This is way beyond the pale. And, you know, and of course Buck saw this as an attack.
No, but this is a planned thing. He saw this as an opportunity. He saw
it's a wonderful opportunity, because if you saw today, every mainstream media outlet has picked this up and written a story about how Ken Buck smashes his Colorado Republicans. They're loving this. Ken Buck is now a hero of the left.
Right.
So I mean, is that the guy you want as your quarterback?
No. Well, and let's go back, and because I want to, Todd, you said something that is just so true, that, and even the polls show this, people watching January 6th, and they're reading what's happening, and they're seeing what's happening, and they're seeing the way that the January 6th people are treated versus the way the Antifa people are treated, between the way January 6th people are treated, what that one guy yesterday got 22 years, but rapists, you know, murderers, horrible people are set free, right? People are seeing this. So like you said, it's not like you were like, you know, Googling some dark websites that no one ever sees and it's coming out of left field. People know this. And for Ken Buck to come out and just to accuse you guys of gaslighting when his whole thing, it's wrong.
It's a lie.
And it's constructed in such a way that you have to pick it apart to see what a lie it is. And like you said, none of the corporate media or the mainstream media said, well, actually, Kent Buck isn't true. What he says there is wrong. You know, they're not quoting Marjorie Taylor Greene. They never even reached out to you, right?
No one has called me at all.
Wow.
And what?
Well, in George Brockler's show, which is great radio, by the way, he went attacking you and backing up Ken Buck. And then he would say things like, see, you don't have any facts. You don't have any facts. And the average caller, of course, hasn't gone and taken Ken Buck's letter and then seeing his sources and then checking like Julie did on the federal site and everything else. And so I've challenged him. I sent him a text, say, you want some facts on this? I'll give you facts. You can come on our show, I'll come on your show. Because this is a clarion call. This is really important because Ken Buck is the one who wrote or called Dave Williams and said, I want my response to go out to everybody. And did good. You want it? You got it. And I think the reaction, either he likes it if he's planning to change parties or become Antifa or something, but
he's
boy,
a little old for that.
Well, yeah, you know, and he dyes his hair. He looks young.
We've got one too. I don't know if you guys listeners haven't followed Julie Kelly. Oh. She's a great reporter for the Federalist. She's on the War Room. She's probably the preeminent reporter on the January 6th stuff.
Yes.
And she was infuriated. If we could please play the Kelly tweet, or not play, but put it up on the screen. This is what Julie Kelly was tweeting. She goes, I look forward to contacting Ken Buck's office to schedule an interview to discuss this letter. His defense of the Department of Justice isn't just mostly baseless. It's an appalling, inexcusable endorsement of the selective prosecution and imprisonment of Trump supporters. Now, she hasn't indicated that Buck's office has called her back, and he's not going to because his letter is just full of lies and gaslighting, right?
It's not gaslighting so much. It's just wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when you cite the AP fact checkers who are very left and they just give a blanket conclusory statement that no one hasn't been charged before being arrested, it's just wrong. But they don't care. The fact checkers never check facts. And Ken Buck never checks the fact checkers. This is either going to make or break his career, I think. And I don't think it's going to make it. I think people in Colorado have had enough of Ken, as much as I like him personally. But boy, wow. How to go off the deep end? You know, somebody told me, he said, well, really, what Ken Buck's office said to Dave Williams was, hey, we're drowning. Can you throw us an anvil? Go, like, okay, here's an anvil. Boom. Think with that.
Ask you this, Todd. This is my theory on this, because Ken Buck could have just shut up, right? Really? I mean, this was, no offense.
Well, the other two did.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, crickets from Boebert and Lamborn.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's kind of like, it's not this, thousands and thousands of more. I mean, people, I saw there was like 51,000 people saw Marjorie Taylor Greene's, you know, blast attack on Ken Buck for attacking you. Probably a few hundred people would have read his letter. But so you kind of think, is he just dumb? But I kind of think that somebody prompted, because I imagine Ken Buck didn't read the letter and go, oh my God, I'm going to respond to this. Somebody, I submit, reached out to him and says, we got to get rid of those stupid grassroots Colorado Republicans. They are driving us crazy.
No.
Well, let me ask Todd, then you can say your thing. I think that that's how this started. And I mean, I'm sure he's perfectly willing, but I think this is a continuing, ongoing attack on the grassroots rising influence in the Colorado Republican Party. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, we crashed their country club party, didn't we?
Yeah.
we have the establishment contingent down here in El Paso County around the Colorado, the Springs area, and the Bremerites, I call them, Eli Bremer and his band of faithful followers. They say that we are progressive.
Oh.
We are the progressive wing of the.
That's what they do up here in Adams County. They've all gotten. They say, you know, they're killing us by calling themselves grassroots, so we'll call ourselves grassroots. It's just like Oh, people used to call themselves, I'm a moderate Republican. And that became so unpopular, they went, I'm a conservative, whatever that means. So I'll say, I'm a conservative. So now they're all saying, we're grassroots.
Well, the comments, I mean, I'm sure you looked at it all, Todd, in the X or Twitter, whatever you call it, were not very kind to Ken Buck, were they?
No, I reckon not. But I'm not going to let go of the fact that, man, all of the Democrat-controlled media loves this guy now. So what does that tell you? When your enemy loves your partner, I mean, maybe your partner's not exactly on your side.
Here's what I think, and I get disagree with Julie. I think Ken Buck said, look, I'm anti-Trump. I'm a Liz Cheney supporter. I've got to find a lane in which I can be anti-Trump but not get Cheneyed. And so this is the thing. He's going to stand up for law enforcement. He's going to stand up for our wonderful federal agents. He's going to stand up against the idiotic Trumpers. And that's his lane. And you can see it if you just go to Google and all the stories you go, you know, I can't vote for a convicted felon. No, I'd never do that. And saying that Trumpers are awful. He's got to figure out, and this is the way he's going to do it. That's true. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's not just a brain freeze. It wasn't a McConnell brain freeze that caused him to do this. It's a plan.
It's a brilliant plan.
Stupid thing he said. He goes, your letter further asserts that there have been violations of these defendant rights, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, criminal defense attorneys regularly say that. It's like,
sometimes it's true. And why do you think we had a constitution? It was to prevent prosecutors like Ken Buck from trampling on people's rights. That's what the Fifth Amendment's about.
And then he goes on to say, it gets even more ridiculous. So he's complaining, your letter is lying because criminal defense attorneys say rights are violated. And then he goes, in my experience as a prosecutor for 25 years, trial courts carefully consider the merits of the motions because a case could be overturned on appeal, for Pete's sakes, and requiring additional work for everyone.
Yeah.
So did they have AI write this? Maybe. I mean, it's just kind of like,
well, I kind of like the image of the 20-something skinny suit twerp writing it, but I'll go with the machine. Yeah, sure.
Wait, so Ken Buck is saying that your letter is full of lies because you say what criminal defense attorneys say and that their rights are being violated. It's like, what? And he says courts never allow rights to be violated because that requires a lot more work for people. Mm. It's like, what? No. It's no, like what? Ridiculous.
Well, one more time. I did this job for 24 years, man. I'm not a...
What kind of agent were you?
I was a Border Patrol agent. Okay. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about criminal complaints, I'll say this and watch, you know, it's Ken Buck's, you know, boy toy AI machine or whatever will probably pick this apart. But if I had to guess, and I probably made tens of thousands of arrests in my 24 years. Tens of that. I mean, a Border Patrol agent makes more arrests his first 2 weeks on the job than some city cops make in 20 years, just because of the volume, the massive volume. So I know what a criminal complaint is. I know at what point a warrant has to come into play. And to Julie's point, with the people that they arrested and then sought the charges to be applied later, the standard that we were confronted with was an arraignment within 48 hours. So the police arrest you on a warrantless arrest because you have probable cause. You write the complaint, you deliver it to the prosecutor, and they've got to get you before a judge in 48 hours to be charged. Now you've been charged. The charges have been filed in a court. That didn't happen with some of these guys.
To remember the procedure you just outlined is for misdemeanors. You can do that.
No, these were felonies too.
Eventually, you have to file. That's the point. The time frame is a thing.
You can have them arrested and brought before a judge for a parole hearing, not a parole, but for a bond hearing. But within 30 days, you have to, under the Speedy Trial Act, you have to get a federal grand jury indictment.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah, that happened. That was further down the road from my. But you know, we'd arrest drug smugglers, human smugglers, all this. These would be felony charges. You know, a felony committed in my presence. You arrest. This is the process, and they had to get him before a judge in 48 hours to be arraigned.
They wouldn't. They were still not charged. There's under federal law, a charge is when an indictment
is brought in
a grand jury, right. Unless it's a misdemeanor. You had the Fifth Amendment. Says you have to have a grand jury for basically serious charges, which is interpreted felonies.
It matters because, and again, so we're saying when Ken Buck refutes your claim that people are being held without being charged and says that's absolutely not true, Ken Buck is absolutely incorrect. And what they did to this one guy, they held him. The way it works is, like you said, you're either supposed to file the formal charges or let the person go, right? This Lucas Denny guy, they held him in jail for more than 90 days without filing charges. And what happens there, guys, is you're in this weird legal limbo. Once charges are filed, there's an infrastructure for motions hearings and trials and all that kind of stuff, right? When you're just sitting there and you're not charged, you're like nowhere, right? Like, I mean, you could raise your hand and hope the judge calls on you, but the judge would be like, you're not charged yet. I mean, and I would submit they're doing that on purpose. And that's why Buck, not only does he miss the point, but he's defending the weaponization of the Justice Department, and he's defending Joe Biden treating ordinary American citizens like political prisoners, because that's what they are. When you're holding somebody without filing charges for over 90 days, I mean, that's beyond, I mean, it's unimaginable to me that happens in this country. And for Ken Buck to defend that, saying, well, you know, the judge must have a good reason.
Well, it's a judge. It's a judge. Oh, it's a crooked Obama judge? It's a judge. No, Ken Buck must resign. He must do penance on the border.
He should get rid of that. They should get him off the judicial committee.
I think. That's what Julie Kelly said. What kind of disgraceful person's on the judicial committee who doesn't believe
in justice.
That in the Constitution? No, criminal lawyers bring up 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. Yeah, they do. And sometimes they're right. And you make it sound like it's never right. It's you know, we don't, our Constitution is a tissue paper you have no respect for. And the Bill of Rights you have no respect for.
Clearly not.
Yeah.
Clearly not. But we're progressives in some corners. We're, you know, radical extremists in others, because
I prefer the latter.
Yeah, well, I can't write Eli's script for him. I'd like to. We want the government to follow the law. How is am I missing something here?
You are, Todd.
You are, Todd. You're misleading. There's somewhere in there it says you're misleading our activists.
About fentanyl, Todd.
Fentanyl. Oh my God, that straw man in the end, right?
Yeah.
We're wasting our time on this. We need to go after fentanyl. You know? Okay, I got it. Yeah, fentanyl bad. Mm-hmm. I work down at the border. I know a couple things about that. But hey, you know, maybe there's more than one thing that we should be concentrating on. How are these not related? Because it's the administration behind this they've perverted the judicial processes. And I kind of cringe at calling him a judicial process. Really, we don't have a justice system in this country. We have a legal system. We have a system of law, and law gets applied on whomever they want it applied.
Good point.
And but meanwhile, they turned the law off down at the border, and that's why you got fentanyl up here.
Yeah.
Well, he said you're misleading Republican activists to do things that are, you know, worthless, like January 6th. I feel like saying you've been in Washington too long.
Yeah.
The base calls themselves grassroots in the Republican Party. Only the Democrats call their base activists.
Oh, that's a good catch. I like that. Well, that would explain why CNN likes him now, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, Todd, because again, I see this as also a hammer that the people who are opposed to the grassroots gaining influence in Colorado trying to smack you guys down and embarrass you and shut you up. I'm assuming you guys are not going to just say, "Oh well, Ken, I guess our bad. You won't write any more letters without calling you first." What are you guys going to do going
what's
forward?
We? It's us.
What's us? Yeah. What are we going to do going
we're
forward?
We're going to give them a letter in reply.
Which yeah,
we'll,
right.
We'll help you with.
I, you know.
Oh, well, I'll do one on my own.
September 30 is going to be kind of fun, isn't it?
It is.
It's going to be an interesting day. I wonder if the good buck will be there. Or how about Boebert and Lamborn? Maybe they'll finally opine on this now that they've sent a canary into the coal mine.
Well, they know one thing is that getting Doug Lamborn to respond to anything, on any subject, anytime is impossible. He is an absolute stonewall of nothingness. Lauren Boebert hoped she would, but who knows?
But well, listen, Todd, we got to let you go.
Sure.
Got to. We will talk more about this because I have a feeling this isn't going to go away. And again, I thank you guys.
Yeah,
for
thank you for
that
writing
letter.
The letter. Thank you for thank Ken Buck for exposing yourself. This is wonderful.
That's right. And then thank you to all of the people on Zoom who've been listening. And I want to let you know we've got more coming up. Again, a bunch of rhinos, right? Not Democrats, filed a lawsuit today to try to keep Donald Trump off of the ballot in Colorado.
Including our very own Krista Caper.
Yeah, and Kevin Priola's wife, Michelle Priola.
Yeah,
so there you go. But Todd, thank you guys very much. Thank you to everybody on Zoom.
We appreciate everybody.
Yeah, catch all of our shows at chuckandjulie.com. And Todd, we'll stay in touch and keep everybody updated on what we're going on.
And we're going to have fun on Party Friday.
Yep, Party Friday coming up. We'll see everybody later. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.